Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, right here on The Mark Steiner Show, on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I took a trip down to Andy Musique in Mount Vernon with my colleague and drummer, Robert Shaheed from the Baltimore Blend, right here on WEAA. We met up with Stanley Cowell. Stanley Cowell is a professor emeritus of jazz piano at Rutgers Mason Gross School of the Arts, a Steinway artist and legendary jazz pianist himself. He was here in Baltimore getting ready for a double performance and CD release party at Andy Musique coming up this Saturday, December the 19th. More information on tickets and those performances are available at andymusiquelive.com. That's andiemusiquelive.com. We are here with Stanley Cowell and Andy Musique, watching these lovely hands move across these keys. My brother and comrade, Robert Shaheed, is here as well.
And happy to be here watching the maestro at work himself.
Good morning, or afternoon.
Good afternoon, whatever this is.
Yes. I have two hosts.
You do. Nice. Well, I felt like, you know, Robert didn't get a chance last time. Robert should be here, and I always think Robert knows more about jazz than most folks.
I missed you the last time, and I begged him on one knee. If I could just be here, I'd be happy.
Nice to have you.
So welcome back to Baltimore.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
It's this journey here, you're playing a concert here at Andy Musique very shortly.
Yes, with my quartet, plus...
Sunny?
Sunny, my daughter's going to sit in for a couple tunes at the end.
That's good.
Yeah, on viola and vocal.
She's going to be playing viola.
Yeah.
That's for her.
Taking time from her law practice to join us.
And why not?
I had to get that in. Exactly. We're very proud of her.
No, she's brilliant. She's smart. She's talented. So you did well. So anyway, welcome back to the city here. And I just, for folks, I mean, Stanley Cowell, I mean, your name is, I mean, when we talk about jazz and artists who are with us still at our age that are still hanging and playing and moving, this is because you've played with so many of the greats in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right here in Baltimore.
In Baltimore?
Yeah, Max Roach.
You played with Max Roach in Baltimore?
Many times. At the Left Bank. Huh? Art Blakey once. And Bobby Hutcherson, Harold Land.
Right. Was this in the 60s?
That's enough.
Yeah, 60s, 70s.
Baltimore had a rep with Left Bank Jazz Society back in the day.
It was a great Sunday concert, right? Right here, you get off the train and you can walk right up the street and be there.
That's what we did.
Who are you bringing down with you for this concert?
I'm bringing Bruce Williams on reeds and flute, a wonderful saxophonist and flautist who has been working with me off and on since like 1997. But we just recorded a new quartet album a few days ago up in the New York area. So the rhythm section is Jay Anderson on bass, and Billy Drummond is our fabulous drummer, our spiritual leader, as I call him.
Legend.
Yes, absolutely. Billy Drummond. Yes. That's going to be a real treat. Looking forward to it.
I've been having a lot of fun with these guys, so it's great for me to be able to have them come to Baltimore and participate in this concert.
So, obviously, you've been teaching music, jazz, for 20, 30 more years, right, before you retired?
Yeah, 33-plus, actually.
Right. So I'm curious. I want to ask you this last time, which is just having played with Art Blakey and Max Roach and all these incredible artists, and you're being an incredible artist yourself, and you've been teaching all these young people. What's your thought about where jazz is at the moment? You know, with all the young people, where it's come to with the young artists and the difference between then and now?
Well, I think that there are many more players, and schools are churning them out, and they have a real challenge. I think we actually talked about this once before, the venues, the number of venues.
About that, yeah.
And opportunities for them to play. So they have to be kind of entrepreneurial themselves to create the venues, and hopefully others that love the music will also kind of shepherd this idea and develop places. I understand that there are several venues in Baltimore. I don't know whether that's more or less than used to be, perhaps.
Definitely
Robert.
Definitely less. Yeah, Baltimore was a thriving music and performance city, but it has decreased pretty seriously now.
Yeah, because I mean, Pennsylvania Avenue was the place that was always.
We had Miles Davis on Pennsylvania Avenue and Sonny Stitt coming through now. It's only maybe three or four actual regular jazz venues in the city.
Is this Andy Music?
Definitely Andy Music is one. Caden Castle would
Caden
be another.
Right.
And the Creative Alliance has a number of features that they do. And of course, the Baltimore Museum of Art give their regular concerts. That you know Mike Binsky, who produces many of those, yes.
Oh, that was the other group I came down with. I filled in for George Cables when he was ill with David Weiss, trumpeter, and that group, the Cookers. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
I've talked about this with some folks the other day. I'm a friend of mine who's teaching jazz here in Baltimore, and jazz artists who have gone or in their 70s or 80s who are still playing, they didn't train as jazz artists.
Most did not.
Right?
Yeah, right.
But today we have jazz schools now. I'll come to it in a moment. But so that, there's a big difference. I mean, you came up through music a different way to jazz.
Yeah. It was around me because my sisters, my older sisters, danced to the music of Billy Eckstine and some of the jazz orchestras of the time, and in the 40s. So, and we had blues records, and actually it was a small area of the music business, so we had, they were actually called race records that we had. And R&B was evolving at that time, and coming early R&B, and I used to try to sing with the quartets till I found out that I couldn't, really. I said, I better stick with the piano. But I started piano very early. My oldest sisters taught me, and I could read music by the age of four pretty well, and they took me to their teacher. And I began studying
piano
and classical music primarily.
So, I mean, but I guess many people start out with classical music. When you start with piano, that's where most people begin.
Yeah.
I guess unless you're in the church or something where you begin with something else, with the gospel and more. But that's kind of the difference. I'm wondering if it makes a substantial difference in the music that gets played and prepared when you now have where you taught in Peabody and all these other places having jazz schools.
Well, I think all your experiences eventually will come into play. As Max Roach told me, don't throw anything away. Classical experience informs some more than others.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're coming out of, the blues tradition and gospel music, and you can learn how to improvise within a jazz context, then that colors your music in a certain way. The classical tradition has been around for several hundred years, and the kind of virtuosity that comes with that, which manifested in people like Art Tatum and Earl Father Hines.
MJQ, too.
And the MJQ. See, it's a different perspective on the music, and it gives you a different coloration, so to speak. I was fortunate to have maybe absorbed most of that because in my hometown there was Toledo, Ohio.
Ohio.
I heard Art Tatum at my house at 6 years old.
Wow.
And that was like somebody stamping something on your brain without you realizing it.
How did that happen? By the way, digression.
My father. My father was a friend, grew up with Art Tatum. And when he came back to Toledo for a visit in 47, I guess it was, 1947, he came by to visit my father. That story has been told a number of times. How he
originally inspired you to play piano?
No, I was already playing piano. My sisters, as I said, had studied, and they kind of taught me very early on, even at the age of three, to begin to read. But their teacher wouldn't take me until I was four, till my feet could reach the pedals. So that's what she said, at least. But anyway, the repertoire of the classical music kind of went hand in hand with all the music that I was hearing in the community. And there were all these churches within a walking distance. And sometimes I would just go around on Sundays and check them out. We'd go down to the the tambourine playing electric bass and swinging at the tabernacle, the sanctified church, and they were really cooking in there. But I chose the Episcopal Church because of the short service. My aunt came up from the South and took me all to a bunch of churches, and they actually scared me in one of the Baptist churches. Almost this lady was playing the piano and almost fell off the keyboard. She was hitting it so hard. I eventually settled on the Episcopal Church, and by the time I was a teenager, I became choir director and organist there. And that's the first place that I really began to improvise. I would improvise the preludes and postludes, and it was kind of at the same time that Miles was discovering the modes, because a lot of the plain song part of the service is in the Dorian scale. That kind of scale. You know, that was a connection with the music that soon I found myself playing for dances and so forth with some of my high school friends. And the music of that time was jazz-like, the American songbook, popular songs. Maybe some funky things like a honky-tonk. And Boogie Woogie, you know. And then a lot of the solo gigs that I had to play, I would find these arrangements by Tatum and Fats Waller, and I'd play for weddings, receptions, and different things. So by the time I realized what the knowledge that I had acquired, it was pretty broad, and it took me a long time to integrate these disparate, diverse elements into something called style.
Your style.
Well, whatever that is, it's a potpourri of influences.
Yeah. Do you think, as students now that go to the now present universities to study jazz, there's plenty of schools now that offer that, as opposed to what it was like when you were coming up? Do you think that takes away from the individuality that some of these musicians, I can't tell some people apart now. It seems like they all come from the same style and school of music, where I can listen to a Stanley Cowell with Max Roach and know that that's Stanley Cowell. Is there a difference now?
I think that, there are some people that seem to be born with style, like Thelonious Monk. I mean, he was playing that way his whole life. Art Tatum, for instance, was a eclectic player in that he just absorbed so many influences, and I'm kind of coming out of that. Those students that are coming out today, it's going to take them a while to evolve into something that's personal. I think a lot of them are, in a teaching situation, you kind of want to bring everybody along a certain path the best you can. There will be individuals in the class that can distinguish themselves within that mix of students, but most of them, they come with something original inside, but you kind of want to expose them to a general body of knowledge, a general body of musical knowledge. And in order to do that, everybody has to be exposed to pretty much the same thing. So those are things like scales, the common harmonies, harmonic practices, what others have done. And by the time, now this tradition is over 100 years old, and what others have done is pretty amazing.
Body of work.
Yeah, it's a big body of work. It takes a while to absorb all of that. So I think there are very few players that come out under 20 years old that have anything that's, really, really personal.
Unless these new players that are out now that particularly catch your ear as somebody who's a unique voice?
It's a couple of pianists. David Vareles, I think, is very unique. And these are Cuban pianists.
Yes.
That the other one, Arwan Ortiz, is very, very unique, those two pianists. Names slip my mind right now.
That's okay.
I haven't been thinking about so many of the younger players yet.
They don't really
affect me that much, and I'm also off the scene quite a bit. But they usually, when I do play New York or somewhere, they show up and introduce themselves. So I can't really fully comment on that.
So let's go backwards then for a minute, which would be great. I'm a lousy musician, but I love music. As a young man, I guess the first jazz influences on my life when I was like 14 years old or so was Modern Jazz Quartet, Miles, but Max Roach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've always been kind of really enamored by Max. I remember I bought the Freedom Now Suite, Abby Lincoln and Max Roach.
Oh, yeah.
And that right?
Expression.
Yeah.
Deep expression.
So it's just a personal question. I'm just very curious. I've always wanted to be able to ask this. Can you describe for all of us, our listeners, Max Roach? What kind of human being he was, what he was like to work with, what his mind was like?
Well, Max was a musician who came up under the tutelage of people like Benny Carter and played in Benny's band in the 30s. Then, of course, hooked up with Charlie Parker and the whole 40s school of all those so-called beboppers, as they're categorized. That was the language, but he was expanding also. And he went back to school and became a composer and studied at Manhattan School of Music. And he became a great leader in the 60s of his own groups. Even before that, I'm sorry. Yeah, I can't forget Clifford Brown and that band. But that was, I think, the first major band that he had. Unfortunately, Clifford passed away too young in a car accident. But he continued to field wonderful players in his band. I think by the time I got with him, it was just I was totally in awe of him. It was almost I could hardly play, and he had to smack me around a few times and let me know that he was human. And it was after a while, there was a point where there was some mutual respect there, and. I learned a lot. It was like going back to school, because when I came to New York, finally, my final move, I was playing a lot of free music, and there was a political awareness that, music became political. People that I was associated with when I first came, like Archie Shepp and Sonny Murray, Rashid Ali, and so forth. It was part of the urban unrest, mid-60s and all that, so... That has, as a political and social event, has also informed my music. I've written pieces reflect the civil rights struggle. I think that also happens with musicians as you evolve. Max Roach was certainly a pioneer in that area also.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Mingus contributed a song, several songs.
Yes.
That reflected the frustration of the times. Yeah. Yeah, right. I recorded that one also.
Did you?
Yeah, I did a civil rights suite on another album.
Right.
Trio, you know that one.
This is a great album. I love that album.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Max also in his later life was always expanding his palette musically. So he, Boom was the drum ensemble, string quartet.
That's right.
He had a daughter who was a violist also, like my daughter, yeah. And Maxine Roach, yeah. So, he never gave up. He never gave up expanding his horizons and seeking other modes of expression. So I hopefully, that's his influence on me also.
My favorite with you and Max Roach is on the Members Don't Get Weary album with Gary Bartz and I think it was Jimmy Merritt on bass.
Yes.
What was it like on that ensemble? We used to see you in Philadelphia when you performed that, and it was...
Yeah, it was schizophrenic. Well, it was two bands, Tolliver and Max. That was straight ahead. It was Brownie and Max, and with Merritt and the original saxophone player was Odean Pope.
Oh, that's right.
Before
Gary Bartz came.
Yeah. And he and Merritt out of Philly had this connection with Hassan Ibn Ali, and they had a school of thought about rhythms and so forth that was, I always tell people, when they, like Hassan would come sit in Philly at the Aqua Lounge with Max. And it was like they opened up a, when they played, it was like somebody opening up a suitcase full of ping pong balls. You know, the rhythms were just all over the place. Yeah, yeah. And Jimmy Merritt was, I consider him a great mentor in a strictly musical way, even more than Max. I mean, I learned a great deal in the theoretical aspects of music. Mm-hmm. From him, that opened my mind. From Max, I got the entrepreneurial influence, start your own company, publish your own music, and how to maintain a group. Although he's coming out of, him and Mingus are coming out of the rough school where you might have to knock somebody out if they play a wrong note. I don't think I want to do that with the guys I hire. You know. I'm too old for that. I think I've covered, you know.
No. First that I heard that played the electric upright, yes. I think, in the jazz. And did he play that when you all were working together?
Yes, he did. Uh-huh. He played that. I don't think he ever played acoustic bass when I was with Max with that group.
It was a unique sound.
Very unique sound that he brought to the group with that.
Yeah. It was also about the world that you ran in as a young man, and even now, that around jazz, that is, you describe part of it as kind of very politically aware of what's happening, and that kind of the music in some senses was a voice to that. And kind of that's also something that's always been coupled with kind of the intellectual depth of jazz and a lot of the musicians who play jazz. I mean, there's something, you know what I'm saying? I don't know if I'm articulating this very well, but how those can be kind of streams kind of was always hit me as part of jazz, a part of the way you think about music, think about how you change rhythm, how you improvise, how you turn things into a different way.
Yeah, after a certain point that you master your instrument to a certain level, you master the theoretical and perhaps even the repertorial aspect of the music, then you can be very spontaneous. And I think you can respond to influences that are right here in the room. Like a story about Charlie Parker, Roy Haynes was talking about how he could, you know, he'd be deep into a solo and you'd think it was just all about that song and the music and manipulations of the harmonies and so forth, but then he might play a pretty girl, it was like a melody, and he'd sing because he saw somebody in the audience, right? And Jimmy Heath's another one like that, right. That they are just a library in their head of all kind of being able to quote things and be spontaneous. That's the word. So if that spontaneity can come to the fore, then it pulls in everything. Clifford Jordan was into the Sufi practices of sounds that of the universe, sounds of the sphere. You know, you're always looking for another angle. Another, if you have to inspire yourself or you can be inspired by external factors. Travel was always one that worked, too, for younger musicians because they got the energy to really travel a lot. It's a great experience because it throws them into different cultures. It exposes them to other musical elements. So when I went to Senegal the first time, or South America the first time, or Japan, all those, I mean, I've written music now that is based on those experiences. Ellington did the same thing. Classical composers did the same thing, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like here in America.
Rimsky-Korsakov.
Right.
Scheherazade.
Right.
You know, and it goes on and on.
I'm talking with jazz pianist Stanley Cowell at Andy Musique in Mount Vernon about his upcoming double performance and CD release party at Andy Musique this Saturday, December 19th, in Mount Vernon in downtown Baltimore. More information about those performances can be found at andymusiquelive.com. That's AndyMusiqueLive.com. We continue this conversation when we return, and also hear what's in the city paper this week, right after these messages.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner here on The Mark Steiner Show and your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And I'm talking to Stanley Cowell, professor emeritus of jazz piano at the Rutgers Mason Gross School of the Arts, a Steinway artist and a legendary, legendary jazz pianist. I met him with my colleague Robert Shahid of the Baltimore Blend here on WEAA, who's also a great drummer in his own right. We were at Allende Musique in Mount Vernon in Baltimore. Stanley Cowell has two performances coming up this Saturday, December 19th in Baltimore. You can find more information at andemusiquelive.com. That's A-N-D-I-E-M-U-S-I-K live.com. Let's jump right back to the conversation. Tell about this concert coming up. What, can you do a little bit? What, just
oh, yeah.
Tease us a little bit.
We do have a concert,
we
don't we?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why we're here.
My
details. It's great to see you. But
we're having fun. It's the Stanley Cowell Quartet at Andy Music on December 19th, featuring the wonderful personnel I think I referred to earlier. Bruce Williams on reeds and flute, Willis Drummond, or Billy Drummond as we know him, on drums, and Jay Anderson on bass, and yours truly on piano and kalimba. And my daughter, Sunny, will be sitting in and singing a number, one of her originals, plus playing two numbers with us. And there's a wonderful reception. It's a holiday party, and I've actually written a holiday suite that will be performed that I'm looking forward to doing.
Can you do a little bit for us?
Oh, yeah.
Can
the holiday.
Like?
Yeah, maybe the.
Listen to
the holiday.
The sense and.
Oh yeah, it's also a CD release party. That's the main. That's on that. That's very important. Yeah, reminiscent.
Oh, I love the CD.
Thank you so much.
It was really, yeah.
Yeah, it's a CD release party. Thank you.
was great. I was thinking about how someone was talking about how sometimes when you are a serious musician, play all the time and have to kind of keep it in your mind and keep it in your body and know where you're going and then let yourself go where you want to go. But that also has to keep our minds stimulated as we get older.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly, yeah.
Right?
That's a great activity for that. And say music is a type of an intelligence that, spatial kinetic intelligence, right. Math, logical math intelligence. And I think it keeps there are many examples of the musicians that take care of their health that are still around that older than me. older than I am, that are doing well. So I have that hope. I always tell people that I'm looking forward to the next 50 years.
Amen. So, you know. And we are too.
Yeah. To your next 50.
We're only 5 years apart. So, which isn't very long. Which isn't very long. Actually, this is kind of maybe off the deep end a little bit, but did you ever play with Billy Bang?
No, I never have. Is he from this area?
No, Billy's not from this area. We went to high school together in Massachusetts for a minute.
Oh, in Massachusetts.
And so he went to Vietnam and came back and became this incredible jazz violinist.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just died. He just passed away recently.
That's right.
He was really great.
Yeah, I was asked to be on a recording of the Vietnam vets.
Yes, that
musicians.
Right.
Yeah,
but
I confess that even though I had written the song, my first album was called Blues for the Viet Cong.
Right.
And the producer, I said, well, you know, I'm not a Vietnam vet. I was not there. So I didn't do it. But I was asked to do that. I think Michael Carvin was on it, and Bridgewater. Those guys were actually experienced that.
Right.
Yeah.
Billy was an amazing artist, and he was a very interesting character.
You know, I was going to mention to you that there's a CD party and holiday reception as part of this concert that begins. If you have tickets for either concert, you're welcome. You can get into the holiday party. There's going to be food and drinks,
all right
too.
All here, and on the music.
That's right.
And on the music on December 19th.
So does this mean that Baltimore may be seeing a great deal more of you in the coming months and years playing, since this year now moved closer to us and have one of your lovely daughter being here in Baltimore?
Well, it's possible. My manager is Sylvia Cowell, my wife, and...
She does a great job, by the way.
She handles those kind of things. I do want to remain active and whatever that takes. I don't want to overstay my welcome, though, either. You know, I was here in, what was it, August? Yeah, the
That's
August.
Right. It was Sunny.
August, yeah. For Sunny's concert and participated with her. I think the last one was 2011 when I had Nasheed Waits and... Taras Mateen and Sonny, celebrating a previous album that Sonny had done with me called Prayer for Peace. So, if Baltimore's open to having me, Sylvia can arrange it.
I was thinking about some of the pieces you've done. I was listening over the weekend to some of your earlier work, the Viet Cong piece and some of the other pieces that you wrote. And it feels like you were as influenced by the world around us socially and politically, but also just by the world around you, just by the culture, by the outside, by the life and all of its aspects. All these things kind of, for want of a better term, infected your work. I don't like the word infected, but yeah.
Yeah, that's
inspired
true.
Inspired your work.
Sure. Some things, you know, one nice thing about the studying music is that you learn how to construct musical pieces, because you're not always inspired. There's very few pieces just roll off your head, you know. But for to compose, as Max influenced us, to create your own vehicles, because you can also survive on those royalties. And that's a very practical thing. But in doing so, it's very hard to be creative all the time. So different situations may come up. For instance, commissions. People say, okay, well, we like that one song you did. Now we'd like you to write something bigger. So I wrote a piano concerto in honor of Art Tatum in 1991. It was premiered in 1992, I think. Prior to that, I got a commission to do some choral music for a group in Ohio. And then more recently, the solo piano album that I have had released called Juneteenth, based on the holiday civil rights issue again, was penned, composed by me. And, you know, I had to work really. I couldn't just sit around and wait for inspiration, but I had to really start by constructing certain musical things and then over a period of time honing them to something I thought was more personal. It's also been voted as album of the year, jazz album of the year for the New York City Jazz Record magazine. So it's all solo piano, but it was originally written as a sabbatical work for like 100 pieces for orchestra, for a symphonic band when I was teaching at Rutgers. And it was for symphonic band, chorus, and electronics. And because I also used my Kima electronics processing of the piano in performances and on record. I won't be doing that for December 19th. Yeah. Some of you may appreciate that I'm not doing, but it's, you know, I ever since I heard composer Karlheinz Stockhausen speak when I was a student in the 60s, actually in the late 50s, he said, all recorded music is electronic music. And something went off in my head. I said, oh, well, wait a minute. If it's put in that format, then it's manipulatable. So it can be, you can create sounds based on those existing electronics, electronic music. So that has evolved, and the technology has made it very easy to travel with. So I've done several European tours, taken my equipment with me, which is very small now, fits into a backpack. And I've been able to mix it with my acoustic piano playing and record, process the piano in a way, in various ways, in real time. In real time. And it's not having to carry a synthesizer around. It's the acoustic piano where I can really get the depth of feel and touch with my fingers and control the sound.
What recordings did you have when you did that?
The first one was the recording. It's my trio featuring Vic Juris on Steeplechase. It's called Welcome. Yeah, guitarist Vic Juris. And he does a lot of, a lot of guitarists these days, they have an array of footstuff. And I used Kima with that. It was called Welcome to This New World. The latest CD, I haven't decided what it's going to be called. It will also feature three pieces that use this processing of the piano. And now I have just gotten the okay from the guys. I said, how would you all like to be processed at certain times, you know? And I said, yeah, if we can rehearse and know when to do it, yeah, we're amenable to it. So
when is that new CD coming out?
It won't be out for at least 7 or 8 months, I'm sure. Yeah, usually in the fall. It's the Steeplechase. Yeah, the new one, the one we really want to focus on is the reminiscent CD, and the music that we'll be playing December 19th will be primarily from that. Features a couple, a Jackie Byard blues that I'm sure you'll called Mrs. Parker of KC, which is Charlie Parker's mother. Other songs that are on there, the title's tune, Reminiscent, is on there, which is loping kind of thing. And it's really a lot of fun for drummers, as Robert can probably, because, you know, it's not the usual straight-ahead thing. And you can dance, dance a lot. And the bass pattern also gives the bass player that kind of freedom. That's something, too, that Jimmy Merritt influenced me with Max, because he would give you a little straight time, and then he would dance. So he'd be playing figures like dom tiki pom pika tang kuko pom pom ding 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 ding, just give you a taste of it. I think that's a Philadelphia thing, Buster and Reds,
all those guys, Reggie Workman. That's right.
They knew how to dance rather than just the straight ahead walking, and I guess that kind of evolved after bebop, where the bass was really so important in lining things up.
Well, I'm very excited about all this.
I am absolutely excited myself. We can't wait for the concert. Looking very much forward to it. And it's been really a pleasure to be with you this morning.
Thank you so much, Robert, Mark. It's great.
It's always great. We can have Staniel Cal number 3 next time. There's 1, 2 now. Next will be number 3.
Yes. Well, Baltimore, December 19th. I hope to see many of you. My friends that live here, and family and cousins and and fans, finally, but most important, fans.
So, yes, people, folks, call 410-385-2638 or 301-717-0088 or go to www.andymusiclive.com. That's AndyMusicLive.com.